I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames.
Radio Network coming to you live from downtown Waukesha studios at the WAUK. No Brewers game today, still ahead of the Cubs in the National League Central. And no, this is not a sports show, though I will talk about basketball extensively. Are you even interested in the NBA Finals first games tonight?
Yeah, yes and
Dallas
no.
Dallas Celtics?
I mean, yes. I grew up going to Celtics rookie training camp. I was there.
Oh, wow.
I got to meet Reggie Lewis. I got to hang
Very
out.
Cool.
I walked Kevin McHale to his car back when he was retiring. I saw him his last couple of years there, and the guy just did around the world just to mess around. He did not miss a shot. And the guy's
nice.
He's a post player.
Yeah, he's a post player with an outside touch of a guard, right?
That was, just to give you a timeline, that was D. Brown's rookie year, and that's back when Rick Fox still played for the Celtics.
Rick Fox.
Rick Fox has the largest calves of any human being. Yeah, besides Mark Pryor. Mark Pryor has Popeye calves.
And he's
calves.
Ridiculously good looking.
Yeah, that too. He did have a huge presence. Yeah, he went to the Lakers to go and be on TV basically, he was actually one of the few people that actually did it.
Yes,
I mean LeBron James had to make his own production company to be put on.
But
TV,
he got there.
Yeah, he got there.
If I do watch, I'll be rooting for the Celtics.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, the basketball poster I had in my room, this is going to age me. Sidney Moncrief.
Oh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Sidney Moncrief.
Sidney Moncrief.
Wow.
I also was a huge Pistons fan.
Okay.
It was basically like I would root for the Pistons, the Celtics, and the Bucks, anybody to beat the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, because you were in Bulls hell at that time.
Yes. It was deep, dark despair for years and years. I was a Pippen fan, though, mainly because he didn't get any respect.
Yeah, well, you know.
Scotty still doesn't get the credit he's due.
Do you know why? There is a reason why. I mean, in the Chicago bars and the clubs, they did call him No Tippin' Pippin.
Oh, for real.
On top of that,
No Tippin' Pippin. It's forever now changed in my head.
Yeah. Plus, I'm pretty sure that, like I had to talk to him a little bit.
Yeah.
Basically, to delay that we couldn't let him in because we were at capacity.
Oh, so you're just chatting him up.
I chatted him up to make sure that he didn't feel like he wasn't important. So I had to like.
Brian, I think between you and I, we could write a handbook for life for famous politicians and famous people. The thing about tipping is something that like most famous people just figure out on their own. Like if you are a notable person that will be notable for a period of time, you have to tip the heck out of people because the alternative is no tipping pippin.
Yeah.
And that would be one of the things like. Be nice to everyone.
You know who's one of the favorite people on all of Chicago sports?
Who?
Frank Thomas, the opposite reason.
Big tip in Thomas.
Yeah. He had his own seat at the bar I used to work at.
Oh, I love that.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll watch a little bit. It's not really the focus. I also had a really burning topic that I wanted to gauge your and our listeners, you folks out there, what is your opinion? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Where do you get the best Diet Coke?
Oh.
Because I have a whole hierarchy of Diet Cokes.
Oh, my.
Okay?
That's it. They all hit different.
They do, right? And everybody knows the Coke and the Diet Coke formulas are different in different parts of the country because people have different taste. For soda, by the way, it is soda. It's never pop. It's not a cola if it's Sprite.
In the South, no matter what it is, what kind of Coke do you want? I'd like lemonade.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a Coke.
Out east, it's Northeast, it's sometimes tonic. What kind of tonic you want?
What kind of tonic you want?
Yeah.
Where do I get the tonic?
Take a left
at the Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, at the Dunkin'. At the Harbor?
Is it by the Harbor? By Harvard Yard?
At the Harbor?
How about them apples? So I have a whole theory of Diet Coke, Maggie's theory of Diet Coke.
Okay.
Worst Diet Coke, probably it doesn't matter which soda you're drinking, it's always the worst, is the 2-liter bottle. Bottom of the pyramid.
Okay.
I'll drink it if I have to.
If it's all consumed within the
like
hour.
Like 30 minutes. Yes.
Yes.
You get 30 minutes on the 2-liter.
Yes.
That's it. Now, I have taken, back in the day, I've taken 2-liter bottles of Diet Mountain Dew into a library with me when I had to, like, do an overnight.
That's you're not asking for quality there. You're
no,
just trying to keep it
through.
No, it's just,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So the 2 liter bottom, absolute bottom of the barrel. Next up from the 2 liter is the 20 ounce bottle. Also terrible.
For the same reason.
Exactly for the same reason. It also doesn't keep the cold at all.
No.
I don't like plastic as a vessel.
Okay.
It's never good in plastic.
All right.
Next up is any gas station Diet Coke off the tap, okay, bubbles.
Yeah.
In styrofoam.
Ooh.
I know it's not good for the environment, but in terms of preserving cold, icy, crisp Diet Coke,
yeah, that does, it does do that. It does do that. On Kalamazoo, there was a famous Den Pop. They always had it for a dollar, and it was like this giant bucket of styrofoam.
One thing, I mean, side note, dear Democrats, don't do things, stupid things like ban big sodas in big cities. You just look foolish.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's next. I don't like it. It's low on the list. Because it's in styrofoam,
yeah.
Bad for the environment.
Totally.
Okay.
But with crushed ice or not?
Oh, I like the crushed.
Okay.
I like it.
Crushed ice and styrofoam seems to work together better.
Yes. That is the secret combo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just, for some reason, cubes doesn't seem right in a jug of styrofoam.
No, may I insert here? I don't know if it's on the hierarchy yet. A warm can work. With block ice, like larger chunks of ice, you pour it over.
Yes.
It gets a little watered, but then that's like the most, like if you get it all in that one sip or two, which I sometimes do.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's very good.
Yeah, yeah.
Next up, the cold can.
Yeah.
But the absolute pinnacle, the best Diet Coke of all Diet Cokes is the McDonald's. Supersized Diet Coke with the McDonald's straw. You have to have the McDonald's straw.
The straw does, they do have a different size than all
that,
other straws.
That thing is patented.
Uh-huh. On top of that,
they have a secret formula.
It's not a secret formula. Do you know what the secret
is?
What,
it's just different?
Rigorous cleaning. And they have their own.
Oh, yeah, they keep their.
That's part of their, like,
yes.
McDonald's is run like a factory. There is an exact method for
everything.
Every single thing.
Yes.
Top to bottom.
There's a manual on it.
There's also a water purification system, so you always have the same level of purification of water in every McDonald's soda. This is from what I understood, from what people have told me, because I've been asking
you
around.
About my Diet Coke hierarchy, that you would have some factoids relevant to said discussion.
Again, I have not corroborated this. I'm just
it
telling
makes sense
you things.
To me.
That I have heard
that checks
from
with
several
my common
folks.
Sense.
Yes.
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 I will get off the highway to get myself a Diet Coke from a McDonald's.
Same thing goes with regular Coke too. Regular Coke I will have is actually from McDonald's.
McDonald's.
Yeah, I have good. A can, my I'll sweat for a good hour.
I sweat most of the time. It's not really triggered by anything.
No, like it's worse. It's more worse
pronounced.
Bad.
It's more worse bad. More sweating.
Yes.
Extra sweat.
Ungoodly.
Ungoodly. Yeah. Yes. Somewhatly.
Somewhat.
Irregardless.
Yes.
What is that word? Irregardless.
I don't know, but it's impossible.
Indeed. What's your favorite Diet Coke? A question of the day, all afternoon. Now, don't confuse the "What is your favorite Diet Coke?" question. With what will be coming at the 3 o'clock hour, which will be the word of the day for the Sconny Summer Text to Win statewide contest that Civic Media is running. We'll give away one winner's prize each hour that we run the contest. So in the 3 o'clock hour today, there will be a winner, which is fabulous. There's a day, each day has a winner, also super cool. You get a chance to win every single day. And then over the 2 weeks that we're running the contest, at the end of it, there'll be a couple of grand prize winners. Here's some of the cool stuff that you can win. We've got Civic Media Brewers Club level tickets. They're beautiful tickets. We also have basically weekend getaway packages. Ones to Wisconsin Dells. We've got Lake Geneva. We've got Door County. I think we've got Crystal Lake with a pontoon. That one's got it.
Pontoon.
I mean, if there was any summer activity that could be more Wisconsin than pontoon boating, I don't know what's more Wisconsin than pontoon boating?
Drinking a beer on the pontoon,
well,
having cheese.
What do you think I mean
say
by
cheese
pontoon?
Again, and then cheese curds. Say cheese curds again.
Meat and cheese plate on the pontoon boat with adult beverages.
It's like going to Chicago and getting deep dish pizza. Did you mention deep dish pizza on this broadcast for Chicago? Yes, I did. We're in Chicago playing baseball. Deep dish pizza. Deep dish pizza. Cheese curds.
Cheese curds.
Cheese curds. Hey, I'm in Wisconsin. Back, We're in Wisconsin. We're going to have some cheese curds here. Did you know that there's cheese heads?
I can't stop him anymore. I just let him go.
Sorry, guys.
It's all right. Enough with the deep dish pizza. It's not a pizza. That's a casserole.
And the cheese curds. It's delicious either way.
I like cheese. I got to say that. Cold can texter Todd from Oshkosh. Cold can's pretty good. Cold can is pretty good. It's not as good as the McDonald's over ice.
Yeah.
This is an excellent question from a friend in Madison who identifies as a plumber. Better question is, how much? What is the ice to soda ratio? I like
That's
the soda.
The other thing.
Yes, I like the soda to be already cold, right? So that you don't get the melt. I don't like the Diet Coke watered down.
Yes, and even if you do the, because a lot of people don't run their hoses through ice. You have to run your hoses through ice.
Through which ice.
Yeah, there's some people that do that. But again, that's a pain in the butt to clean because you have to move the ice out of the way.
Yep.
But a lot of people, like a lot of bars, will run their hose
around
through the
ice,
and then it goes up into the...
Very nice.
Yep.
I like it. You burn through less ice. There's an upside. What's up, Sherry from Horicon? What's your favorite Diet Coke? If the Coke is cold, I'm like, max the ice out. Fill the cup up to the brim. But if I have to take it to go... and I can't be refilling, then I'm about a 50-50.
Yeah. So as a bartender, I already automatically fill every glass with ice. Every time.
Of course. You can't unlearn that.
I can't unlearn that. Uh-uh. So it's weird for me not to have it like
that. You don't have... Yours is always fill it with ice.
Fill it with ice. But again, I know people who do the less ice so that they can get more out of more soda. And I'm like, really?
But it's not good then.
This is how you're going to... This is how you're saving everything, is by getting more soda this way?
Yeah. Huh. I could do a whole show on having to pay for refills, too. That's ridiculous.
Do you know how cheap that stuff is?
It's like a nickel. It's probably not even a nickel. We'll get to the politics, I promise. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. That's Brian. Give us a call or text 855-75-CIVIC. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Keep running because the winner don't quit on themselves.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
Kelly, can you handle this? Michelle, can you handle this? Beyonce, can you handle this?
I can't handle it.
I don't think
can't handle
can
it.
Handle this.
Can you handle it?
No, I can't. That's why I'm playing it, because it's in my head. I cannot handle it anymore.
Earworm
of
earworms.
I need to play it because it's in my head. It's got its own earworm itself, but then it has that...
The guitar. Stevie Nicks,
yeah,
right?
And all I picture
that earworms.
So I have them dancing in front of me, and I have Stevie Nicks in the
background.
With Jimmy Iovine next to him, kind of dancing.
Well, that was basically the video. It was Stevie Nicks and some flowy Stevie Nicks witchy stuff playing the guitar, and then Destiny's Child.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
You can't go wrong.
No, but it is an earworm.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for playing it then,
no
Brian.
No problem. It's going to be here the rest of the show, everyone.
Yay! He's Brian Kelly. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. You're going to want to stick around until at least 3 when we're going to be dropping the word to text and win. Our Scotty Summer statewide text giveaway starts at the top of the hour. But at the bottom of this hour, I'm really excited. We're going to have a terrific guest. I am going to be joined by an expert to help us talk. This is going to sound really boring, but it's actually super sexy and interesting. This is part of Joe Biden's Top 100. And so today we're talking about what the Biden administration has done to break up enormous monopolies that make you pay more for all the stuff.
Oh.
All the stuff that you need to buy.
You know that game, Monopoly?
Yeah,
It was designed to bother you and make you mad and make you realize that it's kind of a rigged system.
Yes, a little bit. This is really cute. One of our texters letting us know they gave up Diet Coke when they heard that Donald Trump was a fan. That's Matt from West Dallas. What's up, Matt? Sherry telling us she likes iced tea with ice. I like a lot of ice with my iced tea, that's for sure.
Unsweetened all the way.
Unsweetened. Yes, that's me. So we're going to be talking about monopolies and antitrust. I'll explain why it matters to you, how it hits your pocketbook every day. We're going to be talking about three huge antitrust cases that are going on now, brought by Biden's administration to ensure that things are as affordable as they can be. And here's what I'd like to say about that. We hear all the time, and we continue to talk about, and the reason for this has nothing to do with Joe Biden. It has everything to do with Republican policies that, frankly, put the screws to the middle class since Nixon's time. Yep, it still hurts out there, right? Greedy corporations are keeping prices at their all-time inflationary high simply so that they can gouge us all for more money. That is greedflation.
Yeah, if they can't make it in the United States, they say it costs too much to bring it here.
Yep.
And then if they make it in the United States, they say, oh, it costs too much to make it here because they labor costs too much.
You get it coming and going. We're going to talk about, again, the big three cases that Joe Biden's administration has brought to try to bring prices down for you. And here's the thing I want all of us to remember. Sometimes government, sometimes public policy is actually about harm reduction or trying to avoid things getting worse. Okay. That is where we're at with Joe Biden. So if you're looking at your radio saying, Maggie, if people keep saying the economy is doing well. By the way, the Standard & Poor's, the S&P 500 hit its all-time high throughout all of American history and the entire history of the S&P. All-time high yesterday. Not in the news. If you're looking at your radio saying, "What? You're telling me things are going well? It doesn't feel like things are going well. Gas feels expensive. I can't buy a house. Groceries. I mean, every time I go to the grocery store, I'm sort of, wow, zing, that hurts. It would be so much, so much worse if Joe Biden wasn't president. So much worse. And sometimes the fact that it's not great, we need to understand that perhaps we are in a harm avoidance period of time. So again, if you're cynical about this, if you're hearing, the S&P keeps going up, couple of things at play here. One is harm avoidance. The other is the long-term wealth inequality intended by Republican tax policies, Republican shrink the government going back to the 60s and 70s. The great expansion of the middle class in this country occurred after Roosevelt's New Deal policies were put in, after the social safety net was put in place, after entitlement programs were put in place. Why? Many reasons. But what that did is it allowed folks, working people like you and me in America, to have some stability. When you have stability, guess what you do? You go to work every day. You start to organize. There was the rise of organized labor during that period of time. It was at its apex. And because following World War II, the federal government basically subsidized the purchase of homes by tens and thousands, hundreds of thousands of veterans. It also happens to be today the 80th anniversary of D-Day. And I'll be talking about that today. But I'm really excited about the guests we're going to have at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk about these antitrust cases. It's important to understand this stuff. Not always the sexiest thing, but very important to understand how all of it works together. But before we get there, I had to tell Eileen Cannon did something stupid again, Brian.
I'm sorry. I don't know what to say. Shocked. I'm totally shocked.
Okay. Eileen Cannon, something galactically, terribly, observably stupid. You may have heard my colleague Jim Santel hosts Amicus, a legal brief, on Saturdays. He talked about the CFPB case that the Supreme Court just decided. The CFPB is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The details of the case were not or are not important. The legal case challenged the constitutionality of the CFPB because of the mechanism by which it is funded. The details here, again, not important. Most people believed it was a pretty stupid case. Why? Because Congress enacted the law creating the CFPB and Congress enacted the law establishing its funding mechanism. And that's the way things work. And surprisingly, the vast majority of the people on the Supreme Court got it right. Footnote, Samuel Alito, nope, didn't get it right. Wonder why. And basically, his buddy Clarence Thomas called him an idiot in the opinion, which is great. Here's what Aileen Cannon is doing. She is requiring the parties in the Florida documents case to write 15-page briefs about whether or not the CFPB case supports or undercuts Donald Trump's argument that his prosecution is illegal because of the way that the special prosecutor's office is funded. Think on that. They concluded that the CFPB's funding mechanism was indeed constitutional. So she's asking for briefs about how a case holding that a constitutional funding mechanism for one department has something to do with the special prosecutor's office under a completely different set of U.S. code provisions. It makes no sense the woman is actually this dumb. When we come back, our special guest for this day four of Biden's Top 100, where we're going to be talking about what Joe Biden has done to keep prices down for you and your family. When we come back, don't go anywhere. Your farm update is next. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's just for you, baby.
This America.
Maggie Dawn, you're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's day four of 100 days that celebrate the best of what Joe Biden has gotten done for middle-class Americans. Really excited to be joined today by Bella Devan, who works with the Institute for Policy Studies. She is the Associate Director of the Charity Reform Initiative and co-editor of inequality.org. We're going to talk a little bit about monopolies and antitrust litigation. Real sexy stuff for a Thursday afternoon. Don't worry, we'll make it interesting. I have to start, Isabella, whom I will call Bella, just like I am a Maggie. I will start with the most burning question on top of everyone's minds, which is, when you play Monopoly, do you put the money that you have to pay on Chance Community Chest and the income tax square, do you put that money into free parking?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm all for boosting that free parking amount.
You're a free really so I'm a Monopoly purist, hated by my friends and family because I refuse to allow the chance of hitting free parking to be a game-changing outcome thing that happens. So I don't do it, but I understand.
It's a good metaphor for unbridled capitalism, you know? You gotta have that possibility.
I don't even need to put any breadcrumbs out for my friend Bella. She knows exactly where I'm going. And that was precisely where it was. Folks, if you don't play Monopoly, a lot of times people stash all their money that they have to pay into a free parking square. And then if you accidentally, by chance, or the luck of the genetic lottery, happen to land on free parking, you get all the money and you get to buy all the stuff and win it all. Explain to folks, Bella, a little bit, what is a monopoly and why is it bad for consumers? Let's start with the very basics.
Yeah, so a monopoly is basically outsized market share that allows a business or a bad actor in industry to control it, to be kind of a gatekeeper that can exert its power on either the provider of a good or a product. So like that could be a writer, that could be a farmer, that could be a drug manufacturer, or they can exert their power on the consumer. So if you're, you know, wanting to buy a cheap product that you really need and Amazon is the only option because it seems like it's the cheapest product, that's what you have to do, even though that might be suppressing competition elsewhere or not being the best version of the product that you need. And so by consequence, monopolies can really control markets and create a really unjust sort of landscape for business and for being a consumer.
And setting aside for the moment, whether or not specific monopolies or monopoly-like powers exist within particular industries. Certainly, everyone listening, you don't have to be a lawyer, an economist, or as smart as Bella is. We know, right, when we look out into and we think of our day-to-day lives, that there are certain providers and things that we are, frankly, just stuck interacting with, that there's almost no option. You mentioned one of them, Amazon.
Right.
We think, I think of, you know, it's like as Xerox is to a photocopy, Google is to a search engine. We all just say, Google it. Google right. didn't used to be a verb. It is now, because what we all end up defaulting onto is Google, the search right. engine.
And it took billions of dollars and a lot of political influence to make that possible. That's why they get to do what they do. And it's not fair.
It really isn't. Monopolies, and I love the fact that you pointed out that part of why monopolies are bad for consumers is, of course, if you control the entirety of the marketplace or damn near close to it, you can effectively set your price at whatever you'd like it to be.
Yeah.
Because there isn't competition. But the piece of that that's really interesting, and that I think the government in these cases that we're going to talk about is zeroing in on, is the ability for the monopoly, the monopolizing company, to effectively put up such high barriers to entry that they can keep competitors out. That's the part when I try to explain it to folks as an economist, saying, yeah, they'll jack prices up because they can and they're the only place to go to buy the thing. But what they're doing at the same time is keeping competitors from entering the market. And by stifling any competition, that is what enables them to continue to charge sky-high prices or give you subpar quality for a low, low price. It can work. Something can seem cheap, but often there's some market manipulation going on. You will even see monopoly companies, frankly, underprice everything to drive competitors out because they can absorb the loss.
So exactly.
One of the only times you'll see companies actually selling at loss is when they're trying to exert monopoly power, right? That's part of what we're talking about here, Bella.
Yeah, I love that phrase, predatory pricing.
Yes.
And I think that's just so important. Like, there's this really kind of outdated metric for gauging if something was a monopoly that was like the status quo in government for decades, since like the 70s, the consumer welfare standard. And, you know, I think it's been really cool to see these new enforcers broaden our definition of what actually harms people in the economy. Like, it's not just a deceptively low price. It's, you know, narrowing innovation, narrowing the possibility for a better product to come onto the market. And that really hurts everybody a lot. And it just makes things bad.
It does. We all love the convenience of Amazon, but both as sort of a policy wonk and an economist, their dominance has bugged me for years, right? It's just, it's like, this can't be good. This can't be good for other small businesses. Folks talk about it all the time, right? Whether you're a writer or someone trying to sell a product, how difficult it is to basically sell not through Amazon in some way, and they're taking a cut. It's just such a challenging market out there. Tell everybody a little bit about the three major lawsuits that are going on right now that the Biden administration brought.
Yeah, I'll make sure that my three are maybe the same you're thinking of.
They probably are.
What's amazing about the, you know, current enforcement landscape is that there are more active anti-monopoly cases than there have been, I think, in the last like couple decades combined. So there's a ton of action happening right now. But I think what we're going to be talking about today is Live Nation Ticketmaster, and we're going to be talking about Amazon. We're going to be talking about Google. Do I have that right?
Oh, yeah. Great minds think alike. We didn't plan this, everybody. We just showed up.
The synergy.
Yes, exactly. So, Brian, do you buy your tickets on Ticketmaster?
Whether I want to or not, I do.
Ah!
Right.
This is the point, is it not?
If I'm lucky enough to be in a specific club, I get to go and be a part of the early buy tickets. But if I don't do it fast enough, I get to buy from those early buy tickets in the early buy window from secondhand. The secondhand, thirdhand, fourthhand market happens within, 30 minutes of a ticket window opening and closing. People buy tickets before they don't even go to the event. Most of the people that buy the tickets originally do not actually go to the event that they have. It's
What Brian Kelly has so eloquently just described is what I'm just going to call the Taylor Swift problem of Ticketmaster. We actually had people come and testify to Congress when the whole Ticketmaster system went kablooey when T. Swift went out on her Eras tour and started selling tickets. Explain what the problem is to folks, both from the Monopoly side with Live Nation's acquisition of Ticketmaster. They're now one company. But also what's happening, which Brian cheekily described, but what's the operation? How does that work when, oh, I want to go see, I don't know, Dua Lipa. What's happening when I go to try to buy the ticket?
Yeah, so all this anger is so beyond justified. That was such a mess. And what's at work here is just total market control. So Live Nation and Ticketmaster together control 80% of the primary ticketing market. Ticketmaster was the like live event ticketer, and then Live Nation owns and controls the concert venues and the event promotion. So when you fuse those things together, what happens is you kind of trap artists into having to use their services. You trap the venues into having to use their services, and then you trap the consumers into basically having to pay like whatever dynamic price, you know, they're offered. Of course, a lot of that dynamic price too. So the like extremely escalating price that you see in that quick window, those are all junk fees that are basically created to create profit for the company. So those aren't like always going directly to the people who are working on the event or the artist. Those are like just designed in a lab to price gouge you. And then of course, all the like, because they have so much control, they can use outdated technology that allows for bots, that allows for scams, that allows for, you know, crowded waiting room and remember with the Eras tour, the system was crashing like 500 times for people. So it also makes you wait. It makes you pay more. So basically all those things that work together are just because they have the market power to bully people into submission and sticking with the system the way that it works.
So what's different about the Biden administration's approach than his predecessors, including the former MAGA president, right?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's important to note that there was kind of renewed interest in anti-monopoly or like cracking down on big concentrated companies on, you know, across the political spectrum. The Trump administration actually initiated lawsuits against Google and Meta. But what's really different about the Biden administration's approach is that it's a really holistic whole government approach that really has more of a principle that this is important from the perspective of like economic justice and economic injustice at that. So the idea is that they're going to use all of the agencies that the executive branch controls together to ban the junk fees, you know, and that's more of the division of the consumer financial protection. They're going to crack down on the bad actors through the Department of Justice. So much wonky stuff to get into there. But basically, I think the point is that the like the principles are a little bit different. And then the rigor, also the intent to really understand digital markets as they evolve and innovate so that the policy can be, you know, expansive enough and like useful enough to handle all the futuristic growth that we're seeing and the, you know, kind of brave new world that's going to be created by AI and a new internet landscape. So that's what I would say is the main difference.
Yeah. And people may hear this term a lot because it is sort of a signature or a hallmark of the Biden administration to use the whole of government. And when we say that, what we mean to say is that if you think about all of the different agencies and all of the cabinet level officials, whether it's the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, or the Department of Justice, or the Federal Trade Commission, go through any and all agencies of the federal government under the executive branch, there are a number of areas where Joe Biden has said, listen, I want to hear from each and every one of you. What are you doing to keep your eye on how monopoly power or the potential for monopoly power is being exerted within various industries that they come across or touch. That's really interesting to me because in the past, right, as a lawyer and someone, I studied a bit of antitrust law, all that kind of good stuff. It was kind of the antitrust division of the DOJ, and it was the wonky economists that worked there.
Totally.
And it would be just the huge cases. There's more cases now, as you said, Bella, that have been filed and that are pending under our antitrust laws than ever, like in the last 20, 25 years, if if I'm remembering that correctly.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And I think, so this is all being housed to under what's being called the Competition Council. So it's this idea that it's not just about antitrust, it's about increasing competition, like, across the board. So, yes, like, the Department of Transportation is working on airline stuff. And important to Wisconsin, the USDA is working on cracking down on big agriculture and providing, you know, price guarantees for poultry farmers. This is, you know, really governing and running the table. And that's a really different thing than, like, under the Obama administration, the Ticketmaster Live Nation merger got approved. So just, you know.
Which I was so angry about.
Right.
I remember when that happened and they signed off on it. I was like, what are you even looking at? My guest this half hour is Bella Devon of the Institute for Policy Studies. She's the Associate Director of Charity Reform Initiative and the co-editor of inequality.org. It's day four of Biden's top 100. We're talking a little antitrust, little monopolies, little how do you bring about good competition in the marketplace to benefit consumers like you and me. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Bucks.
I'm Satan reincarnated.
I have this thing where I get older, but just never wiser. Midnights become my afternoons. When my depression works the graveyard shift, all of the people I've ghosted stand there in the room. I should not be.
It's me.
Not
Taylor Swift, Maggie Dawn, that is. With my very special guest for day four of Biden's top 100, Bella Devon. She works for the Institute for Policy Studies. She's the Associate Director of Charity Reform Initiative and co-editor of inequality.org. We're talking about what the Biden administration is doing to try to help keep consumer prices down, basically, and all sorts of stuff that we buy. Explain to people what happens if a court and an antitrust, just explain to people what the process is for an actual antitrust case to be brought forward. How does this work? And then what are some of the outcomes that can come from a case?
Yeah, I mean, the process to bring forward a case is a lot of paperwork. They have to do a lot of research. They have to really understand the economy that the you know, monopolistic business is operating in, the industry. And really find proof that the company is, like, willingly engaging in monopolistic practices and trying to quash their competition. Once they do that, they file their lawsuit or they file their complaint. That can go through federal court. If it's the DOJ, that can be sort of like woven through a rules process in the FTC. It really depends. There's, you know, all those small differences in the agencies, but the consequences of finding a company guilty of violating, you know, the antitrust laws, which are from the first Gilded Age, is potentially investigating, you know, unwinding the company, breaking it up. That's kind of the language we're using around big tech. It could look like firing people. It could look like, you know, all kinds of stuff, but everything's on the table. This is a really experimental and exciting moment.
It is. And one of the things that's so interesting to me is that the way to think about this stuff has really fundamentally changed because of tech, right? If you look at these three big cases, it's Google, it's Amazon, and it's Live Nation Ticketmaster, all in a way are tech companies, mm-hmm. even Live Nation and Ticketmaster, because that's the platform that's utilized the platform that they don't improve because they don't have to, the platform that collapses when everybody wants to buy their T-Swifty tickets. That's what's going on. And it's interesting to me in this moment, sort of watching one area of the government try to grapple with these things, meaning the executive branch of government. And what I'm going to say is grapple with the failure of another branch of government, meaning Congress, to meaningfully update our system of laws and regulations to respond. And this is one of those things that I think sometimes people miss in government, is that it's not just, is Congress making laws and doing stuff? You have to understand what the purpose of the executive branch is as well, and that is to use the existing laws and regulations and their administrative authority to work for the American taxpayer, which fundamentally to me, Belle, and I'll ask your impression about this. Again, it's Congress failing to act in the tech space, failing, and most of them don't understand it. And then you're watching sort of, well, the tail of the dog is getting wagged now, and you're seeing these other federal agencies trying to deal with it from this very particular, very unique lens of what exists in the administrative agency space. And I'll say this and then turn it over to you for your thoughts.
Yeah.
When I think about that and what we're talking about from Joe Biden as a whole of government approach, not just here, but in so many other places, the question I ask everybody is, okay, we all think that Congress is pretty dysfunctional. Do you think a Trump administration is actually going to have the interests of the little guy at heart, a whole of government approach? You're actually seeing this from Joe Biden. And that's one of the, you know, get behind, get through the rhetoric and to the specifics, which is, what is Joe Biden actually doing? What is Donald Trump either doing or not doing? Does he even know what antitrust enforcement would look like? Can he describe it? I've digressed. Bella, what do you think about this sort of interplay between Congress and the executive branch?
Yeah, I totally hear you. I mean, no one can say the Biden administration isn't doing everything, like maximizing its power to lead with the authority that they have. And the Trump administration, while they, you know, filed some antitrust suits and definitely ignited some very, you know, rational criticism of big tech and its consolidated power, that's just all immediately contradicted by like other policy choices and other like coziness with corporations and corporate interests. And so, yeah, so what's going on in Congress is kind of tough. I think on the Senate side, there's a lot more opportunity just because of who's in charge right now. Yes. And then on the House side, there was some really interesting bipartisan collaboration happening around like the antitrust subcommittee, which the kind of icon of this movement, who's now the chair of the Federal Trade Commission, Lina Khan, led research for the antitrust subcommittee a couple years ago. And it was like kind of a huge sea change in like opening this possibility. But that committee, unfortunately, is now chaired by people who have a lot more, you know, corporate interests. And it seems like they're not going to be in lockstep trying to help basically create new enforcement power and crackdown power. And that's just, you know, par for the course, I guess. I would also just add quickly that Live Nation, Ticketmaster, the tech companies, they are all spending big on lobbying because they know that that's their inroad right now. They're spending big to inhibit any sort of legislative solution.
I was just going to say, we're in an interesting moment, not just because of tech, but because of the Citizens United decision declaring that money is speech and corporations can spend in campaigns, which sets up invariably a trajectory where the interests of the American public to have competitive industries in the most impactful markets, right, like tech, is coming right up against the lobbying that monopolistic businesses can do at a scale that their competitors cannot. And it's a really vicious cycle with some of the biggest stakes we've ever seen in human history now on the table. Thanks so much for helping us walk through it, Bella Devan, my special guest this half hour from the Institute for Policy Studies. You can find that at ips-dc.org. She is also the co-editor of inequality.org and runs the Charity Reform Initiative. You can go find all of it if you just find a search engine, which may or may not be Google, and enter the words Institute for Policy Studies. Thanks so much, Bella. It's been a pleasure.
Have a great day. Take care.
Don't go anywhere, everybody. I'm going to dive in. We're going to talk a little bit about Steve Bannon, but then we're going to get to where we stand on this, the 80th anniversary of D-Day, and what the future of NATO will look like. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Your news, weather, sports, and local Waukesha news up next, or wherever you may be in the state of Wisconsin.
Always rooting for the anti-hero. It's a process. It's a process. We'll get it done.
I know you got to be frustrated. I can taste it.